Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
Good Thursday to you, football fans, and welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast. It is once again James Sharman here alongside John Molinaro, our senior football writer for Sportsnet.ca. JMO getting set for a big trip to Montreal next week and the MLS Cup conference finals.
Yes.
Toronto against Montreal.
Yes. Should be over 60,000 people in the stands at Olympic Stadium, so quite looking forward to it.
And you can show me around the city a little bit, right?
I am, yeah. Yeah, I am going to show you around, show you all the good spots.
Some of the culinary areas in particular.
Exactly.
Not just Delhi, though, right?
No. There's a good...
There's more to it than Delhi.
Yes.
I like Delhi.
No, I know you like Delhi, and Montreal is very good for that, but there's a good Greek restaurant I can take you to. So, yeah, well, you won't be starving. Don't worry.
Love my Slovaki.
There you go.
Or is it Suvlaki?
Suvlaki.
That's the one. I'm so cultured, aren't I?
Yes.
I'm a cultured person. Big show today. We'll get into the MLS playoffs later with Dan Bonifice of the Denver Post. But to start with some English football, we're joined by a friend of the show, Alison Bender. Alison, welcome back.
Hey. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Great, thanks. Now, you were at the Arsenal press conference this morning. Arsene Wenger getting you set for the big game this weekend, the early one on Saturday. You can catch that on Sportsnet. Against Manchester United. First of all, Alison, injury-wise, there's some concerns with the fullback position in particular, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, I was there bright and early, 9 a.m. this morning. Actually, I've just got to point out, it's quite funny, because Wenger normally has his press conferences on a Friday, and we were speculating, us journalists, we thought the reason why he put it on a Thursday is so he won't have to give any definitive news on injuries. Because then he can say, you know, hey, Alexis Sanchez, he flies back in a couple of hours. I'm not going to have a chance to assess him until tomorrow. And that's exactly what he did say. So that's why we were thinking. That's why he did it on Thursday. But yeah, you're right. There's some big problems. He was really upset with Hector Bellerin. Because he got injured, he said, in the last 10 seconds of the Spurs game. And he said it was a pretty bad challenge, and he said he's going to be out for 4 weeks. So that's a huge blow for him. Cazorla as well, he said he's going to be out, but he didn't know how long for. And Alexis Sanchez, basically, he played in the Uruguay game. He has a bit of a hamstring problem. But the fact that he came back, it's a difficult one with Wenger, because he hates to risk players. So if a player is, say, 50% and is a wonderful player like Sanchez, I think a lot of managers would say, OK, I'm going to play him, particularly someone like Jose Mourinho, who's been speaking about Smalling and, playing through pain, basically. But Wenger doesn't like to risk players like that. So it'll be really interesting, this one, to see whether he starts or whether he starts him on the bench. But yeah, it was a good press conference. Wenger was very good at being Wenger and not giving too much away. He didn't want to talk about the relationship with Jose Mourinho and all that either.
Yeah, we'll see what happens on the match, of course. The season so far for Arsenal, though, league position-wise, they're doing pretty good. They're still very much, obviously, in the hunt for a championship. But there's been some recent wobbles, performance-wise, perhaps. And the fans are getting a bit concerned that we're seeing typical Arsenal starting off great and then declining rapidly. What are your thoughts on the season? Is this a different Arsenal to what we've seen in the last few years?
I think it is a different Arsenal. I mean, the fact they're unbeaten since the opening day of the season, the fact that they have been, you know, keeping pace with the top of the table. I know they have had some shaky starts, some shaky games, a bit of a bad run, and you know, fans have been a little bit concerned. But there's definitely a lot to be excited about as well. I mean, there's always a problem. I mean, the international break curse seems to hit Arsenal every single time. And it just happens to be the fact they've got a huge game against Manchester United here. Then they've got a Paris Saint-Germain Champions League game next week. Oh, by the way, I was also looking at the fixtures. And it's interesting to see that the reverse fixture of this, so the Arsenal against Manchester United, is actually the third from last Premier League game of the season. So this fixture could prove really crucial in the title race, perhaps. So I think it's right for Arsene Wenger to want to get this one right. And they've not won in the Premier League at Old Trafford for 10 years. So, you know, he really has to do something. But I was going to ask him that question in his press conference. But I know what Arsene Wenger's like. And he likes to sort of focus on one game at a time. And I think he would have just laughed in my face. So I just kept that one to myself. But that's what I had to tell you, because I thought, it's really interesting. Three from the end. Yeah.
What about on the other side from United's perspective, Alison? Because, you know, for all of the... you know, the newcomers in the roster, Pogba and Ibrahimovic and so many others, and Jose, they've really, you know, struggled to find their best form. What's been your take on them so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I read a really good article from Gary Neville the other day. I don't know if you saw it, but you should take a look. I mean, I always listen to what Gary Neville has to say. He's obviously still very close to the club. But he was saying, you know, when you have a manager like Sir Alex Ferguson at the helm for, 24 years, and then you have three managers within three seasons, there is going to be so much transition, and it's going to be very difficult. And, you know, is Jose Mourinho going to come in as a saviour and save everything with Pogba and Zlatan? And when you look at the spending, I mean, I know that everyone used to talk about the £250 million that Louis van Gaal spent, but all those separate players coming in, there's just so many of them. You know, Falcao, Valdez, Schweinsteiger, Di Maria, Depay, Martial, it goes on. Can you imagine how much disruption that is within a club? I mean, I think Sir Alex Ferguson was clever in the fact that he got out at just the right time, and this is a bit of a transition. But I think, you know, Manchester United fans must be a little bit worried at the moment. What are they, six in the table? I think 8 points adrift. You know, this could be, or are they 8 points? Yeah, 8 points adrift, exactly. So Arsenal can open up a 9-point lead with a win. So yeah, this game is really significant, I think.
I agree. I think Fergie probably, if he admits to his friends, he can't believe he won the championship that last year, because that was not a great United team. And he saw the writing on the wall for sure. And, you know, David Moyes was sadly the beneficiary of that, so to speak. We ask the viewers every week a big question. And this week we're asking, and I want you to answer it for us. Okay, Alison, it's a tough one. All right, if you're the chairman of your favourite club, okay, whoever that is, and you got the choice of hiring Arsene Wenger or Jose Mourinho, who would it be?
Well, for me, I'm slightly biased, though, because I'm a Chelsea fan. I would always say Jose Mourinho, to be honest with you.
But that ruins the question.
Exactly, doesn't it? But to be honestly and truly, if I was a neutral, no matter who I supported, I would always go Jose Mourinho over Arsene Wenger, to be honest. It's unfair, isn't it? I mean, Mourinho has made all these horrible comments about Wenger over the years, about he's a voyeur, he's a specialist in failure, how he's a bit of a dinosaur, not keeping up with the times. You've got to remember what Arsene Wenger did when he came into English football from Japan. He did so much. He was so innovative. But the problem is the club seemed to be a little bit stagnant under him. And Jose Mourinho, he might not be good over time, like, you know, the three-season itch that you hear about all the time, but he can come in, shake things up. He's not afraid to deal with big-name players, and he can win. He's got such a winning mentality that he usually does something within his, you know, first and second season at a club. And, you know, if I was a fan of any club, I'd be excited about Jose Mourinho coming along. And I'm sure that's exactly how Manchester United players fans felt, even if they didn't like Mourinho, to be honest, because, you know, not everyone likes him. I'm sure a lot of United fans didn't, but they would have been pleased to see him come along after Louis van Gaal, for sure.
Keeping with the theme of marquee managers, Antonio Conte, really sort of making a mark at Chelsea. I think, you know, in large part, Eden Hazard's renaissance this season owes in great bit to the Italian's influence. What's been your evaluation of the job Conte has done so far at Stamford Bridge, Alison?
Oh, I mean, I've been so impressed with him, to be honest. And I didn't know quite what to expect. I was at his press unveiling. And I think he did a really good job speaking English, even though obviously he isn't, he isn't particularly fluent in it, but he gave it a good go. Obviously, we know what his CV is like, the fact that he can come in and turn a club around. I spoke to him, actually, one of the first questions I asked him in that press conference, I asked him if he was going to play three at the back at Chelsea. And he said, good question. Which made me feel nice. But no, and he sort of gave an answer saying, it's like a tailor in a suit. I don't know if you heard the quote, but it was all about, you have to sort of see what personnel you have. And obviously, he started out trying to use a back four with Chelsea. It didn't work. Eventually, he's gone to his own back three. And then since he's done that, I think it's 5 games, 16 goals, and no goals conceded. So, you know, it works for him. And he's suddenly turned some of these players into sort of wild cards. I mean, Victor Moses, mm-hmm. You know, who wasn't used at all, you know, a bit of an unused substitute, and suddenly he's, you know, a fantastic, attacking fullback, and, you know, Eden Hazard, as you said. I mean, he had a torrid time last season, and, you know, the game against Everton, and everyone's saying possibly the best individual performance we've ever seen from him. You've got, Kante, and Matic working really well together, pulling the strings. I mean, I really don't know what it is that he's done, but Chelsea looked like a completely different side, and I have real confidence in him now. And I think he will be given longevity at the club because of, you know, everything that he's taken from a club that was failing so badly and really turned it around really quite quickly as well. I mean, these players were looking so bad towards the end of last season, and they all look like different players now.
Yeah, they do. And as a Liverpool fan, Alison, I'm very concerned about Chelsea right now, because I think they could be the favourites right now, the most balanced team for sure. Now let's assume that John Terry isn't part of the future here, especially in that formation. And let's assume John Terry's probably leaving next summer, perhaps. Who's the next captain of this team? We saw Eden Hazard, of all players, getting the Belgian armband. It couldn't be Hazard, could it?
That's a really good question. I'm sitting here and I'm scribbling down names throughout the Chelsea team. So I'm thinking, you know, Gary Cahill, not so much. David Luiz, no, you wouldn't do that. Courtois, I mean, he's spoken about how he might want to leave. And I'm thinking, you know what, Hazard? I mean, you've got to lead by example, don't you, when you're a captain as well? I mean, it's a really good question. I have to go away and really think about that. But it's a tough one. And obviously, you're right, with John Terry sort of nearing the end of his days, you know, you would have to look for someone else with great influence within the squad as well. You know, Matic has had a couple of stints, but you don't really see him as captain material necessarily. Hazard just stands out, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, which is frightening, isn't it?
He's leading by example. Everyone loves him. He's such a great player. But yeah, good question.
Unless, of course, they go out and sign a Bonucci or a Chiellini.
Oh, don't say that.
J-Mo here is not happy about that one bit.
And sort of speaking of aging players, both Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard going to be leaving MLS.
So Lampard's the guy. Is that you're saying, J-Mo?
I'm not saying Lampard. Well, I'll ask Allison. How much of their their departure from MLS, how much has that sort of been picked up over in the UK? And has there been any sort of discussion, speculation as to what their next respective moves might be?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's actually blowing up right now as we speak. So as we record, there are reports suggesting that Steven Gerrard could be going to MK Dons in a managerial role, which honestly, it took me by surprise. Some people are even saying Lampard and Gerrard, but at the moment it seems to be Gerrard. I need to obviously look into this story as it develops, but that has completely taken me by surprise. I mean, we heard the story obviously when they announced both, you know, that their contracts had expired, and Lampard obviously went from being sort of the world's worst MLS signing to one of the best very quickly within the season. I went out recently to interview him actually when he was training. I was out in New York and, you know, spoke to him about some of the goals he'd been scoring. He'd been scoring some typical Lampard sort of scruffy goals, but, you know, it got him back in the hunt again and, you know, gave him a bit of confidence because, you know, it must be a bit disappointing when you move to a league that's not seen as strong as the league that you come from and suddenly everyone's calling you a flop. But, you know, Lampard's indicating the fact that he could have a playing career still. And, you know, I could see that as well because he's you know, gone out on a pretty big high, I suppose you could say. He's not completely finished. And Gerrard, on the other hand, I'd say probably the best of his years are behind him. But he's got such influence, doesn't he, as a captain of legend. Personally, I think both these guys have got to go back to the clubs where they're known as legends. I mean, you saw Patrick Vieira leave Arsenal and go and get snapped up by Manchester City. And he's doing, you know, such good jobs for them. And obviously the sort of NYFC franchise as well. You don't want to let someone like Lampard, for example, move to a club like Manchester City when, you know, the fans respect him, they adore him. He's a really smart guy, Lampard, as well. He reads the game extremely well. And I always think it's really handy to have a link-up, a sort of a manager-player link-up with the rest of the team because it really helps, particularly in tough times. So I would get the guys back at their clubs, not necessarily to go straight into a coaching role, but to be an ambassador, perhaps, just to help young players, whatever it might be. I mean, you know, Abramovich has got the cash to do something like that with a player like Lampard. But yeah, hey, let's watch this breaking news about MK Dons. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know, right? Maybe Lampard and Gerrard can go there together as co-managers because they work so well together. We saw that with England.
It's the craziest football story I've heard all week. But you know what? Football never ceases to amaze me.
It doesn't.
So, hey, maybe.
Exactly. No, I mean, I'd love to see both those players back at their big clubs, of course, Chelsea and Liverpool. But, you know, the danger is, I guess, the Ryan Giggs scenario where you go there, you stay there, and you kind of stagnate, and then you're waiting for that big job, which may or may not come at some point. Speaking of big jobs and also England, Gareth Southgate sits and waits. I've got his vision of Southgate just like sitting on his couch at home, staring at the phone, just staring. Saying, please,
reflecting.
Yeah, reflecting. And please phone, please ring. He is the guy, isn't he? I mean, if he is not the guy, how shocking is that?
He has to be the guy, really. I mean, who else is there, frankly? You know, the FA came out and said that they would give him the 4 games to make their announcements. We're hearing reports that the announcement will be made within the next month. They always said an Englishman was important. And after Sam Allardyce, I mean, who else is there? And Glenn Hoddle, there's a bunch of English names, but... You know, the fact that he's sort of been on the path, you know, worked with grassroots, which is very important. He's been obviously the under-21 manager, has come in. He's done everything that's required of him, put them top of the group in qualifying. I think the interesting thing is you could say who would want that job. I mean, you know, he said he's going to sit and reflect. And a lot of people were a bit upset by those comments. They're like, you know, I want someone who really wants this job. But it is a difficult job because it does... It ruins managers. We've seen it. Unless you're on absolutely ridiculous cash, and the reports I'm hearing would have him on a much more modest salary than some of the other previous English managers. I think they've, you know, learned from their mistakes. You know, it's a weird one. They've got the 5-man committee to decide. Gareth Southgate has said that he wants it resolved quickly. I was chatting with my colleague the other day, Gav Marcotti, and he was fuming. He said, you know, why would he say that he's going to reflect on this? I want someone to come out and say, like Allardyce, really, you know, this is the job for me, and really sell it. But, you know, he said it's not as if there are hundreds of clubs queuing up for his signature. But I can understand that he doesn't want to sort of create some big kind of almost a begging bowl like this. You know, he wants to be given the job because he's a worthy man. But frankly, I just can't think who else is out there right now that wouldn't seem like a complete shock if they announced it.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, he's so understated, Southgate. I think that's one of his positives, actually, plus his, as a manager as well.
And obviously he's played the game to a very high level himself, so he has that, you know, that to him as well. I know good players don't necessarily always make good managers, but it's another one, strange one as well. I'm hearing reports that he would want Steve Holland as his full-time assistant, which would perhaps leave a gap at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe that sort of Frank Lampard discussion can come back there. There's also Gary Neville being sort of spoken about once again. It's a bit of a mess. I mean, one thing about England is the next game isn't up until the 26th of March against Lithuania. So there is a little bit of time, I suppose you could say. But I think, you know, right now they do have to make a decision and fast, because England fans sort of need to know what's going on, really.
And announce now, because otherwise you wait till March. That's a lot of time for the media to get their claws into this and just blow this out of proportion. Alison, thank you so much. Always lots of fun, this, and we'll chat to you real soon.
Cheers. Nice one. Speak to you soon. Take care.
Cheers, Alison.
It's Alison Bender. You can follow Alison on Twitter at AliBenderTV. We were talking about this on the Monday podcast about international management and how right now there aren't that many big name international managers in jobs. A lot of these countries are going for lesser known managers. Jean-Pierre Ventura being a prime example.
Right.
You know, Lopetegui with Spain.
Right.
You know, that big sexy choice. Whether they're not taking the jobs or accepting them, or whether they're there to begin with, I don't know. But it seems that, you know, FAs are kind of going for the quieter grey men more than the big name. Conte might have been the last guy, the last big name who had that job.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure we'll be corrected on Twitter by someone. Well, what about this guy at this club?
Right.
But generally speaking, you know, it doesn't seem to me that international management is that appealing to a lot of managers at this point in their careers.
Yeah, I wonder if it's becoming that way, just because I can't remember who it was. It might have even been Mourinho. But someone was kind of asking him, you know, would you ever consider, you know, managing Portugal? And his response was, you know, I like the day-to-day sort of involvement of club, right? Where you're sort of directly involved intimately on the day-to-day operations. Whereas with the national team, you know, you lose that. You really only get the players every 3 months for camps, and
you're scouting most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, I think just some coaches like that, as I said, that day-to-day involvement of being involved in the club. Whereas with the national team, it's almost like a part-time job, to be perfectly honest.
And I wonder if that's why international football is kind of the way it is right now, very negative, very boring, not many great matches. I wonder if it's because these managers have all this time in the world to go out and scout teams and to put together scouting reports and strategy and tactics. They've got all the time to study, how can we stop our next opponent from playing football?
Mm-hmm.
Almost over-coaching. And that's why perhaps the games aren't as flowing as perhaps they would be in club football, for example.
Could be, maybe. Yeah. I tend to think everyone is kind of, you know, crapping on international football right now. I think it's just a matter of, you know, I think we're kind of we've overstuffed ourselves on football, right? Like, I mean, how much football is there available to people around the world? Like,
saturation of
games. Yeah, it's just the club game is like, we watch so much of it now. I mean, back when you and I kind of grew up, I mean, we watched, in your case, the English Premier League, in my case, the Serie A, but we never watched other leagues really
at all. So, I mean, so when the foreign European team came in, you're like, exposed these players for the first time.
Sure, yeah.
This is a great Spain team. Wow, I've heard about this guy, but never seen him before.
I mean, watching the European Cup midweek, that was like a special treat, right? And now it's like, it's, I don't take anything away from the Champions League, but it's almost like, oh yeah, Champions League is on.
Yeah, I'll see Messi again. Oh, it's Ronaldo again. Exactly. Ho-hum. The mystique's kind of died.
Yeah, I think maybe that's why there's this perception that international football is on the downward trend right now. It's just because, you know, I think we just watch so much football right now.
Fear not. Fear not. The 48-team World Cup is going to cure all ills.
Oh, yes.
Well, let's move on then to some Major League Soccer. The conference finals begin this weekend. We know on Tuesday, of course, in Montreal, TFC taking on the Impact. While prior to that, we have a big one out west, Seattle against Colorado. We're happy to be joined by Dan Boniface of the Denver Post. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
So obviously, a lot of hype this end of where we live here with our matchup. It's getting some mainstream press, actually, for one of the first times in TFC in Montreal's history. It's great. A bit of a buzz actually being created. I wonder there, at West there, is the Rapids Sounders matchup getting much press? Is it getting a buzz around town?
It's getting a little bit more attention than you know, the Rapids normally generate around here. Just this week, the Tim Howard news ran on the front page of our sports section, which typically, you know, the Rapids aren't usually making front page news here, but unfortunately for them, it wasn't for the right reasons. But you know, it's a tough sports market here in Denver, just because you've got you know, a lot of, you know, you've got the four major sports, American sports that typically get the play, you know, the NFL and Major League Baseball, NBA and NHL. So it's hard to break through, but the Rapids are making as much noise as I've seen them make since I've been here.
And you mentioned Tim Howard. Obviously, that's a big loss. What's been sort of the reaction in Colorado to that? And, I mean, it's my sense is that although it's a big loss, I mean, McMath is a pretty pretty good goalkeeper as well, and that they shouldn't be I mean, certainly it's a drop-off, but I don't think it leaves the Rapids totally desolate, does it?
No, I mean, I think you've got it right on. It is a little bit of a drop off. You know, Tim Howard, with all of his experience, you know, it's got to give you that extra level of confidence. But you know, talking to Pablo Mastroianni, the head coach of the Rapids, and Sam Cronin, the team's captain, this week, they both, you know, were very confident with Zach McMath's abilities. Sam Cronin pointed out that McMath, you know, he was the guy through training camp, through the first half of the season. So he's a guy they're very familiar with. And if you look at the numbers, actually, McMath put up better numbers than Howard did. And that was in large part because the defense was just better in the first half of the season. They were allowing fewer shots on target. And so I think I think they're fairly confident in McMath's abilities. The only thing would be you have that small doubt in your mind of will McMath, you know, make a gaffe in the big situation. We saw him make a couple of gaffes earlier this year that were costly. So that would just be the one small thing that maybe in the back of your mind you would be worried about.
You mentioned Sam Cronin's name there. It's a name well known in TFC circles. Once upon a time, a really respected player here. And the fans like Sam Cronin. And I think a lot of fans were quite upset when he was traded back in 2010, J-Mo. Can you believe that?
I remember.
6 years ago. Over 6 years ago, he was traded for allocation money to San Jose. He's now the captain in Colorado. Can you talk about his impact on that team and what he means to that club?
Oh yeah, he's one of the heartbeats of the team. I mean, he's an absolute leader, an absolute unsung hero on the team. He breaks up play really well in midfield. He's just been a bulldog this year. He's been really fun to watch. And you know, early on in the season, he didn't have the armband. It was Kevin Doyle's. And then when Kevin Doyle went down with an injury in international play, Cronin took it over, and he hasn't relinquished it since then. But, a lot of people, when they talk about how good the Rapids defense is, they talk about that back four, they talk about the goalkeeper. But really, Sam Cronin and the other, you know, whoever he's paired with defensively in defensive midfield, whether it's Michael Azira, or Dylan Powers, or as we saw in the last game against Los Angeles, Jermaine Jones. The defensive midfielders have been such a key to this Rapids defense.
Dan, what's the latest injury news on Gashi, the Albanian forward? Is there any indication whether he's going to be available for the first leg?
So we spoke with Pablo Mastroeni on Tuesday about it. He said that as of now, Gashi is doubtful for the first leg. He is improving faster than what they first anticipated. But as of now, with the game being played on turf in Seattle, there's probably less of a chance that they would roll the dice on it if it's iffy. So it's still just kind of wait and see. He hasn't been in training yet. We're Thursday right now, and I haven't seen him out at training yet. So my gut would tell me they're probably shooting for the second leg to get him back, and that's where they're at with that.
Interesting. Dan, with Dallas sort of bowing out in that first in the previous round, I wonder if things have kind of if this has opened it up for Colorado essentially. I mean, with all due respect to Seattle, you know, Colorado was, you know, I would suggest a better team during the regular season. They have home field advantage. I don't know, do I have it right? I mean, is this kind of set up nicely for Colorado to get to MLS Cup final and to host it?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at all the teams remaining, none of the teams remaining have beat the Rapids this year. Granted, the game against TFC kind of had some extenuating circumstances with the red card early on in that one. But, you know, I think they've got to be feeling good about where they're at. You look at the way this team is built. They were absolutely built for the playoffs, tough defensively, and you know, they're fine. They're comfortable playing these close games, these nail biter games. They've been doing it all season, and their MO is to win those 1-0 games.
Sorry, go ahead. Finish your point.
I absolutely think they're feeling like, you know, I mean, just talking to them this week, they said, you know, we have 3 games left. So, I mean, they're definitely, their mindset is there.
Right.
That they're going to be there at the end.
And, you know, I mean, fair play to Seattle, too, because they did upset Dallas in the previous round. So they're not to be taken lightly. How do you see this two game series lining up? How do the Rapids match up against the Sounders, do you think?
Well, the wild card is Nicholas. The 2 times that the Rapids played them earlier this year, that it was prior to when Seattle acquired Lodeiro. So he's definitely changed their team. He's made it to where they're creating more opportunities from the run of play, and so that that could be the wild card in all of this. But I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, the Rapids are going to go in with their regular game plan of just, you know, trying to pressure high up the field when play dictates it, and you know, when they've given up the possession for long periods of time, they're fine sitting back and soaking up that pressure. So I think they'll go to Seattle and play for the shutout. Maybe try and, you know, nick that away goal on a set piece or something like that. And I think that's how they're going to approach it. Just try and set themselves up so that it's not unrealistic in the home leg. Because we all know that at home, the Rapids are, you know, very, very tough. Undefeated at home this season. Only the fifth team in Major League Soccer to go an entire season undefeated at home. And, you know, they actually set a record for fewest goals allowed at home in a season. They only gave up 7 goals at home all year. So I think they just want to put themselves in the right situation heading back to Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
Dan, I'm going to ask you before you leave us, a couple of big losses for the U.S. team this past weekend, World Cup qualifying. Lots of heat on Jurgen Klinsmann at the moment. What are your thoughts? Is he a dead man walking at this point?
You know, I've followed it, and you know, if you were going to make a change, now is the time. It seems like, you know, you've got 4 months until the next match. That seems like plenty of time to install someone new. And I think it would make sense if they were going to go ahead and do that now, because you look at the manner of the way that they lost, especially in Costa Rica. You know, it looked like the guys had just given up. So when you start seeing that, you start thinking that he may have lost the locker room. You know, I haven't talked to anyone about whether or not that's the case, but that's just the sense that you kind of get. So, you know, if I were a betting man, I would say that now's the time, and we may see a move here shortly, but you never know, because Jurgen's been Sunil Gulati's guy. So, you know, when you tie your name to somebody like that, it's, you know, Sunil Gulati wants to see him succeed. So he doesn't want to be proven wrong. So you never know if he's going to just roll the dice and let him play it out a little bit longer.
Yeah, good point, Dan. Thanks so much. Really appreciate this.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Cheers, Dan.
That's Dan Boniface of the Denver Post. And who knows, maybe we'll be seeing Dan in Denver.
Could be.
In a few weeks' time. You never know.
Could be.
You never know. Gordon Klinsmann, obviously they were the two hardest games for the U.S. to start off this qualifying campaign.
Right.
I wouldn't say they're in danger just yet.
No.
There's enough berths available. But do you think if Klinsmann is let go now or in the next few months, his managerial reputation has been tarnished or actually improved in his time at the U.S.?
I think if you had asked me that question 2 years ago after Brazil, I would have probably said enhanced. Now I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm. It's probably taken a bit of a hit just because when you look at the record, they've really kind of labored for results the last 2 years. And, you know, that game against Costa Rica was pretty bad. And that's to take nothing away from Costa Rica, because they actually played well and they fully deserved to win. Maybe not 4-0, but they were clearly the better side. So I don't want to take anything away from Los Ticos. But, man, they just crapped the bed.
And it's that lack of fight, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this U.S. team, I mean, listen, it's never really had great talent, ever. It's got decent talent, don't get me wrong. It's a good team, but it's had that fight. And the World Cups in particular, you know, they've won games that perhaps they shouldn't ordinarily have won.
Sure, absolutely.
That self-belief. And you saw a team that came close to surrendering against Costa Rica. Which is very unlike a U.S. team.
Well, it's I forget. I think it was Jeff Carlisle of ESPN.com who wrote, you know, the U.S. has always been known for that sort of fighting spirit, right? Maybe not the most talented, but certainly the most committed, or one of the most committed, and they're, you know, they're never out of games because they're always going to chase games, whether they're down 2-0 or whatever. But yeah, I think they've lost that under Klinsmann a little bit to the last few games. So it seems like they, that sort of American identity that they were famous for, is taking a pretty big hit.
Still got to march to either fire him or stay the course, and then
but who you bring in hostilities. Though?
That's a question. I mean, do you revisit Bruce Arena? Is he happy at LA? Probably. I mean,
yeah,
he's coming in LA next year. Good question. Gerard's leaving now.
Yeah, Ziggy Schmidt, did he take another job? I can't remember.
I think he took another job, didn't he?
Yeah, you may be right.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is the problem I've always had with people are say, oh yeah, fire so and so, and you know, get rid of them. But it's not just a matter of that. You have to find a replacement who's going to who is a good fit both personally, tactically. And really sort of get the team that he's taking over back on the right foot in a right way.
You forget about the States right now. Who's the next Canadian coach?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for
that's a stab in the dark, right? That's always a name comes out of somewhere, and everyone's a little bit surprised.
Maybe it's Jurgen Klinsmann.
Maybe, because he has such great history making Canadian teams successful.
No, thank you.
Well, maybe he'll be brought in as a consultant, and then Aaron Vincent.
Yeah, because that worked out well the first time.
That'd be excellent.
Speaking of, it's interesting because further to that, sort of talking about the past in TFC, and we talked about Sam Cronin with Dan Boniface. I have to tell this story, and I think I've told you before, but this was under Aaron Vinter, where TFC was playing at home. I guess this is when Sam was still at San Jose, and I can't remember the result, so don't ask me that, but it was a tough game, and then Cronin played quite well, and I just remember after the game, I was talking off the record to Bob DeClercq, who was Aaron's assistant coach at the time, and we were kind of talking about the game and everything, and he said something to the effect of, yeah, I mean, that Sam Cronin, I mean what a player, I mean, we could use a guy like him here. I just didn't have the heart to tell him
he was here.
I just couldn't say, well, you know, in fact,
but that allocation money sure looks nice.
Yeah, I don't know who they spent that on, or you know what they used that
I'm sure they wasted it,
but
there's no doubt the Sam Cronin allocation money was wasted on someone.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, look, he's, you know, still in the league, still, you know, making a difference for Colorado. I remember writing this at the time, and this was a Preki move, by the way. So, you know, he's been long removed, thank God. But I remember writing at the time that this was a colossal mistake, because Cronin was going to be someone, not necessarily that you could build around, but who could be an anchor for the team for many years to come.
And I remember Carl Robinson speaking very highly of him and mentoring him. In that
central midfield role. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I said, yeah, this kid's pretty good. He listens.
Yeah.
He's got some talent. So, there's a book in there.
Yes.
What could we entitle the book, the TFC story? There's got to be a great name for it. All those awful, awful managerial decisions over the years.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll think about it. Maybe let us know, listeners, on Twitter. Let us know what would be the best title for a TFC book or movie, the early years.
Who would star in that movie?
Who'd be Mo Johnston? The little short, ginger-headed guy.
I don't know.
We haven't got any ideas right now, do we? We can't.
Yeah.
We can't name.
You're catching
title.
Me off guard. I don't know.
Who could be Dickio? Vin
Diesel. Oh, Vin Diesel. No, the Vinny Jones.
Vinny. Yeah. If he shaved his head, yeah, for sure.
Vinny Jones.
Who would be? Trying to think of some early TFC players here. Who would be Colin Samwell?
Oh God!
Just trying to find the most obscure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Andy Welsh. It could be Andy Welsh. Robert Carlyle could play Andy Welsh.
Yeah, Robert Carlyle would be a good one.
I think. Yep. Ewan McGregor could be Carl Robinson. I could see that.
Yeah, I could see that.
Right. I'm basically going to go through the train spotting.
Yes, exactly. Here. I was going to say you're going through the whole cast there.
Yeah. All right. Listen, we're out of time. Our thanks to Alison Bender and Dan Boniface. It is Boniface.
It is
not Bonifaci.
No,
which
Boniface.
Is what I thought before I spoke to him. But thankfully, J-Mo corrected me. Eric Prime behind the glass. Thank you, my friend. I hope you enjoyed that. We're back on Monday. I think just Dobby and Dunlop. I'm going to be en route to Montreal. But don't forget before then on Sportsnet, a big weekend of Premier League soccer. Starting at 7 a.m. Eastern, Manchester United, Arsenal. We have Palace, Man City, and Southampton, Liverpool. So a great Saturday on Sportsnet and Sportsnet World.
And Bundesliga on Saturday, I think at noon. It's
Bayern Dortmund,
which will be a good one. Der Klassiker, as they call it.
The Klassiker?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right. Excellent. You saw in the cafeteria, there's a big Blue Jays sale on right now.
Is that what that line
40% was? 40% off Blue Jays gear. So I'm sure you'll be lining up for some gear. No?
No.
I'm sure you'll get some pretty cheap Batista and Encarnacion shirts right now. May have a look. All right. Hope you enjoyed that. Laters.